Hey everyone, welcome to the Movement / City to City podcast. This has been, we just actually finished the conversation, but as our introduction, I'm David. I'm helping out with the media, the socials for Movement Day and City to City, and glad to do so. This is Greg, the author of the book. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I'm a team leader of the Ride Salvos with my wife, Amanda. That's our kind of tribe in the city of Ride. I'm a part of the Church of the City of Ride and part of the Together for Ride network, looking at how do we operate as one church in the city. I've been part of the Salvos in Ride for 30 years. There's a group of young friends planted that way back when. And I now work for City to City as the Director of Movement.
Director of Movement. And you're going to release your book. It's right now at the pre-launch stage, which is coming on 29th November. Mark it on your calendars. It's called Unity for Movements. It's not the theological, theoretical. It's a practical guide for how to make unity for movements. Mm-hmm. We get into this podcast about what's the purpose of the book, what it is, what it isn't. We get to Greg's story about why he's so moved to write this book and how this book came about. We also answer some of your questions that you've released in some of the comments about how is unity possible? Are we living in a fairy tale? And how is it possible where there's 10,000 versions of the Bible, 10,000 versions of denominations? Should we keep striving for unity? So stay tuned. Watch the whole thing. You won't regret it. Where's filming in which church, Greg?
We're here in Undle Park. At the Church of the Living God's Church, they have given us the opportunity to do the filming here today, and we love that because there's beautiful unity starting to be formed in the city of Blacktown here.
Yeah. So we're really thankful for this church, thankful for everyone who's also helped this happen, and thankful for you. If you can, share this podcast to a pastor, to a church leader, or to your friend. That just helps us so much to push the message out more. So can't wait for you to watch the whole thing. Hey guys, hello Movement Day, hello City to City. This is actually a joint podcast, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Talking about a book that's coming out soon, Unity for Movement. Are you excited, Greg?
I'm very excited.
It's been a while. It's been a long journey making this up, isn't it?
It certainly has been, mate. I didn't realize this is the first book I've been involved in, and I didn't realize how challenging the process was. I've grown respect for authors now.
This is your first book.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's so exciting. And tell me, just super casual combo, what was the three biggest challenges that you found?
If I opened up the laptop to write, I needed 4 hours minimum. I couldn't write in, half-hour blocks. Once you put your head down, you have to keep it down. I found it very difficult. During the process, I had to preach a few times, and literally the weeks I was preparing a sermon, I couldn't write.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't put my head into two deep places at the same time.
Yeah.
So finding the gap of time to actually do the writing, I wrote it predominantly in public spaces because I'm not a quiet room person. I like noise around me. Yeah. So it's kind of written in cafes throughout Sydney. I'm pretty sure cafe owners were not real happy with me because I was spending 4 hours at a chunk and ordering a couple of coffees in that process. So, yeah, probably just carving out the time to be focused. I get why authors talk about going away to their cabin for 3 months. I don't have a cabin and I'm not an author, but I get why you hear them speak about that after going through this process.
And it's hard when you're an ideas man too, right, where you're just downloading.
Yeah.
So you just have to, everything is important and needs to be put on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, probably the hardest thing was bringing it to a close because even as I read the last draft to send to the printer, it was like, I want to make changes. But I realized it's a bit like a sermon. You never finish it until you preach it. Until Sunday comes and you've got to preach, that's when the sermon's finished. It's kind of like we had to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, let's release this one and then version two or the revised version. God's downloading so much on this so quickly that we really are just trying to keep up with what he's showing us. Yeah.
Yeah. And what he's showing us is this book, Unity of Movements. Let's get into it. What it isn't, what it is. Greg, if you could summarize for the people listening, what is Unity for Movements?
So the book's written by two authors, Andrew Cabay and myself. Andrew is the second part of the book and really takes a practical theological approach to movement. And I'll let Andrew talk about what that is, but it's a great read. The approach that I've taken is a little bit different. It's very much a practical approach. It's the how do we do this thing. I approach it from two things, both of them being personal. So firstly, my personal journey into unity, into why is this so important, my journey with God that took me about 6 months to kind of lead me into this space. And then from then, it's my the practices that I've seen and studied in cities that have enabled this to become a reality. What have we learned? What are some of the principles? What are some of the practical things you can do? This is not a program. So it's not a step 1 through 10, how do you do unity? This is something that God's doing and we're following. But there are principles and there are some things he's showing us that seem to apply to all cities, but seem to get worked out differently in their application in cities. So one of the dangers of writing this book that I start with is I'm afraid that we make this program.
Yeah.
And kind of take it out of the spirit, bring it into the flesh and kind of go, thanks God, we'll take it from here, which is, you know, sometimes what we're good at doing. Where I think what we want to do is actually, how do we find the posture whereby we are following God, but learning together as we follow, but not being stuck in a program step guide to how do you make this happen?
Yeah.
I haven't seen one city that is travelling the exact same journey as another city.
Mm-hmm.
And we're journeying with over 70 cities now in Australia and Fiji. So God is doing something amazing. And I think what this book is slightly unique is that it's not doing a deep, well, certainly the first part of the book, the part I've written, is not doing a deep theological dive. It's doing a personal journey into practical implementation.
I want to like cycle back. You just said 70 cities across Australia and Fiji.
Yeah.
What do you, can you expand on that? What do you mean by 70 cities?
Yeah, so part of my role as the director of movement for City to City is to walk alongside and help cities mature, come out of the ground and start to mature in this one church for the city movement, whatever language you want to put around that. And we've started no cities. God's commenced 70 cities and somehow he connects us to them and them with us. And now we help walk alongside them. We help create a conduit of communication so cities are learning from other cities as well, and help create some resources that might help them on their journey. That's essentially what Movement Day, what Movement Australia and City to City are doing together in this space is communication, conduit, resources, and just enabling. And I guess this book is seen more as a resource, you know, to help people on the journey.
It's like a multi-tier unity, basically.
Yeah.
Because I think what you're saying there is that there have been unity movements where pastors gathered around a table, went through the process, united with multiple pastors inside the city. You're saying there was actually 70 of them that you found out. And the role that you've been working with City to City and Movement Day was not just uniting the cities, but uniting the cities of the city. So unity and unity and unity.
Yeah. I think one thing we learned from past unity movements that kind of can talk about what used to happen, but it's not happening today. One of the things we learned was that no cities were learning from each other. They weren't in communication in an intentional manner of journeying together. So one of the key things from the past that we've learned to not do in the future is not to be isolated in these journeys. So trying to let these cities be in a cohort of learning has been a critical part of it. And yet 70 cities around our country are at some stage of the journey of becoming unified as a one church in the city for the purpose of mobilising the church to see the glory of God released upon their city. 70. And we haven't been the catalyst for starting any of those. God has started all of them. We've just been chasing after what he's been doing in pastors' hearts around the country.
That's a busy day and a lot of coffees.
Yeah. Now, some of those journeys are kind of pastors' fraternals that have been going on for 20 years that are now kind of rediscovering a new vision and purpose for being. Others, like Together for Ride, started 7 years ago, Together for Ride being my context, my personal context, where I'm a pastor of the city, right? And yeah, that started seven-ish years ago with no pastors for travel or nothing happening. Started with coffees and pastors meeting one another and journeying together. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get into Together for Ride. So you, were you the founder of Together for Ride?
I think you'd probably say yes, although I don't kind of like saying that. My journey was I had a random pizza dinner called to by a friend. Come to dinner. There's some guys out from the UK. I think you'd like to meet them. I even wasn't really keen to go because I didn't know what it was about, but I went. I met Roger Sutton from the UK and Dave King from Salford at that pizza dinner. And they spoke about a unified church in the city that was seeing a city transformed. Now, something in me was awakened by God at that pizza dinner. And so I commenced a journey with him there. I'd been in the city of Ryde as a salvo for 20-odd years by that stage. And we had really never partnered with another church in the city. Nothing like what we're talking about today, right? Let alone multiple. I didn't even know other pastors in the city. So I left that table, started a journey with God where he started to awaken me to what I believe is his desire for how he wants his church to be. This one church in the city, multiple expressions, but the diversity of those expressions brought together in oneness, with the key outcome being the mobilized church to the city. And I think that's important. This is not about a table for pastors. This is about creating oneness within the church that mobilizes the church for mission into its city.
Yeah.
So that in 10 years' time, our measurement of success is how beautiful is our city? You know, how are we impacting the brokenness of our city to see shalom and wholeness coming to the city? Churches don't measure that today. Churches don't measure their impact in their place. They measure how many people they can get to sit on seats. I've been critical of myself there, if you felt I was being critical. But this is a journey where we're actually taking the Great Commission seriously of go and make disciples of your city. So that was I, the founder of Ride. I was the one who started out the first coffees, I guess. And I met a bunch of other pastors and found out they didn't really know each other, not as good mates who knew each other, right? Might know some names and might have done a little bit. And then, yeah, about 7 years ago, we started having lunches together and we haven't stopped since then. And now we're seeing a city, the early stages, the very, very early stages of the church being released to see our city transform to the glory of God. And the early stage fruit of this journey is sweet and beautiful and heavenly. And I could never do isolated, singular, my church again after what I've experienced.
Yeah, I want to get into that because I feel like I'm a young adults leader inside my own church. And before Unity came, I'm from Illawarra, before Unity started happening inside Illawarra, I was that young adult leader or youth leader during the time, holding, siloed, focusing on my people, whilst praying to God in my bedroom, change all the nations. And when you have the action and the prayer, you go, wait, I can only do so much. How am I going to do the all nations bit that Jesus commissions us to do? Right?
As soon as you take the Great Commission seriously, and as soon as you say our vision is a transformed city, if you have any level of intelligence at all, your next step is, I can't do this on my own, right? And so then you go, who else in the name of Jesus wants to see our city transformed? All the other churches in the city. So part of the challenge for Christendom is we've lowered our vision so low so we can jump it. And we've discarded the vision God gave us, or the mission, I should say, that God gave us. And that is the discipleship of our cities.
Now, you've seen this in Ride, where, yes, there was unity, and that was a great feat to actually happen. But now you're saying you're starting to see the fruit of
mobilization.
The unity, mobilization. Could you step into, like, how actually the pastor's unity you're actually seeing is actually now transforming it, utilizing city transformation?
So that's really interesting. There's two key things here. One is supernatural, and one is in the natural.
Because
when pastors create oneness, and I'll expand it past pastors, when the spiritual leaders of a city create oneness together, there is a release of favor and blessing upon the mobilisation of the church that I've never seen anywhere in my life before. Favour, in terms of favour with the social sector, the council, the police, favour with the city, it's just blowing my mind. We don't knock on doors, they knock on ours. Unbelievable. And blessing, we have not been short of a dollar. Money comes our way, opportunity comes our way. We have not had to work hard at that. We are seeing scripture in action where there's unity commands the blessing. And the blessing is favour, opportunity and resource. That's the supernatural. In the natural, what we're discovering is that on the whole, pastors are not skilled, trained at mobilising their church into the city. So as a pastor on my own, trying to manage my gathered congregation, their welfare, you know, our kids' program, our et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to actually be able to mobilise. Now, I don't mean mobilise two or three people. I mean mobilise 85% of our congregation. That's a step too far.
Yeah.
So what we're seeing is when we come together, we have a greater capacity at resourcing mobilisation. But what that meant for us into the Together for Ride network, as we journeyed together and God said, listen, we had this moment where he confronted us. He's confronted us so many times, but always the confrontation of God's beautiful, right? Difficult to hear sometimes, but beautiful. But he confronted us and said, if you guys have more resources, you employ people for yourself.
Yeah.
Worship pastor, kids pastor, youth pastor,
yeah.
Discipleship pastor. If you're about the city, where is the resource that's employed to mobilize the church to the city? And we went, no one, nothing. And so together, the Together for Ride network employed what we called a city mission catalyst,
yeah.
Whose job is for, on behalf of all of the churches of Ride, to help connect the church to the city and the city to the church. His main role, Jared is his name, his main role, Jared, and he has Robin who works alongside him, their main role is to mobilise the church people to meaningful, regular ministry with the city.
Mm.
Not events, right? Although we can do events, but we're not. That's not the focus.
Yeah.
It's regular, meaningful engagement with the city whereby we are bringing a transforming of the shalom, of the beauty of the kingdom, into that space where we get to engage.
Yeah.
Now, in Ride, in 12 months, we've seen over 100 people released in meaningful ministry in the city.
Wow.
Now, if you multiply that by 10 years, we'll see 1,000 Christians. You know, hopefully we'll get better at it, so we'll see 2,000.
Yeah.
Once you start to see that kind of numbers of people mobilised with the gospel in a city, you'll start to see that city be transformed.
Yeah.
The one thing you won't have to worry about is opportunity and resources, because that actually flows through the blessing created by the pastors who start to dwell in oneness, right? That releases that, right? What you have to do then is manage that, is enable that, is enable people to take up the opportunities that have come their way to move into that. Just as an illustration of that, at our pastor's table once a year, we have a voice from the city come and speak to us. This year, we had the police domestic violence unit come and speak to us. At the end of what she said to us, and this amazed me, at the end of it, she said, now, here's what I'd like you to do. Astounding. Here's the police asking the church.
Yeah.
And what she said to us was, would you make up care packs for people we meet who are victims of domestic violence, and will you put in there a way that they can contact you so that you can be their friends? I mean, this is the police asking the church to be friends to our community who find themselves in the brokenness of domestic violence.
Absolutely.
Like, we didn't manufacture them. We didn't ask for that. We didn't do anything other than invite her to lunch, and she invited us into that incredible space. Now, our job now is to mobilise into that space. But when you're about mobilisation and you start to build structures that enable mobilisation, then, you know, we've already started the process of how we'll be mobilised into that space pre-Christmas. So that's the journey. How do you measure success? You know, kind of what does it look like if you know you're doing this thing? And I'm not super into measurement, but I kind of agree we need to know if we're moving somewhere. And really there's two key things that I kind of ask any city to kind of keep the pulse on. How much oneness is there? You know, how much are pastors not just coming to flight, but how much are they genuinely operating from a paradigm of one church, oneness together?
Yeah.
That's hard to measure, right?
Yeah.
But the other thing to measure is how many people have been released in meaningful regular ministry to the city. That's easy to measure. That's a number.
Yeah.
That number has to keep growing. Now, ultimately, we'll be measuring how transformed is our city. Right? That's a bridge too far at this point in time. But ultimately, that release of the people of God into the city will result in measuring a transformed city.
Mm.
I don't know about you, but that's exciting. The church is moving from the peripheral back into the center of the city, where a city would say, please, church, don't leave.
Mm.
You know, where today, in some cities, I'm not sure if they know we closed or didn't. Yeah.
Did it close or did it?
Yeah, I think, you know, a number of years ago, if a church closed in Ryde, nobody would care less.
Yeah.
I long for the day where they finally go, can you open more churches? Because we love this city, because it's a beautiful city to live in, and we see how you guys create that,
yeah,
and how we can be part of that with you. The thing that we're noticing in this mobilization space, which is a bit new, but when the church mobilizes to care for its city, the city rises to care for itself alongside the church. And what I mean by that is, what we're noticing is the people we're serving, some of them say, can we help? Can we come on team? They don't say that, but can we be part of what you're doing, not just the recipient of what you're doing? And then the other thing we notice is that the guys who have been released from the church, they share it with their friends who may be lapsed churchgoers or never been to church, and their friends say, can I be part of that? You know, I think we're going to see salvation on the mission field. You know, guys getting saved who have never been to church before, but we're actually missioning with the church in the city because their passion is, you know, to see us and to see broken people healed, to see a city rise up in its beauty. And I think when the church does its job of being the, if you will, the motivating force, the central force of that, then the city rises alongside the church. That's exciting too. And we're seeing just little bits of that in these early days start to take place.
I love how you're calling it early days, because yeah, I was just like, this is already transformed my life. Like, I would say I was growing up in the time when unity started becoming important inside my city. Yeah. And it was my worldview. It became my worldview during my teenage years.
Well, you've been fortunate.
I was so fortunate.
Yeah.
I was the product of being able to grow up and seeing that whilst the city was divided and polarizing, I'm a TikTok, I'm a Gen Z,
I was
born in 2000.
Yeah, yeah.
We're always talking about, and I'll name it out, like Donald Trump versus Kamala, you know, this versus that.
Yeah.
We're in that age. And then to look up and see, oh, my pastors are in across my city, aren't divided. They're actually deciding to pray with one another, stand. That is such an encouraging thing for every young person, for every person inside the city. And so that's why I think when you were saying that when pastors decide to unite, it's not just the church members that get mobilized or the people who are like the church leaders get mobilized. There are people who never were ministering in the church, if I can say, that just get pulled and gravitated towards that.
Yes.
Because it's such an amazing moment where they can see God enacting inside the city.
Yeah.
And that's so cool.
I share a story on this because it kind of encapsulates, I think, what we're saying. But I had a church person come and say to me one Sunday, Pastor, I just want to tell you, Pastor, can I talk to you? And I preached, and I thought it was about the message. But she said to me, Pastor, I just want to tell you I'm so proud of our church. Now, I don't know about you, but that's not something that's said every Sunday to me, right? So ears prick up. Tell me, why are you so proud of the church? And she explained to me that the weekend before she had a family gathering, and she explained briefly that her brothers were very strong and anti-faith, anti-church, and always gave her a hard time. And she always found family gatherings were important to her, but they were also very difficult. And she said to me, last Sunday, I shared with my family about how I'm part of these community meals that we've been doing in the city with the, she said, with the Salvos, with the Baptists, with the Presbyterians. And I explained to them how we're part of that. And I spoke to them, my brothers, about the Together for Ride network. She said, my brothers were so impressed. They didn't tear us down. They were impressed. And then she said to me, and one of my brothers said, do you think I could come and join them? I thought, that's a church to be proud of. See, non-church goers are proud of a church that loves the city. Tim Keller made the comment, I think it's a very true comment. If you become famous for love, they'll listen to your message.
Mm.
I think we've been in our building saying, come and listen. But in actual fact, our fame is not that we're great lovers of the city. Our fame is probably that we judge the city, probably the outside church judges the church quite harshly. They certainly don't go, those guys are just brilliant lovers. Well, imagine if that changed. Imagine if the church of the city was famous for its love.
Mm.
Now they might let us talk about the Jesus who is love.
Yeah.
And they might have ears to hear that. And I think this lady was just expressing that she was not proud because what a great preacher we've got. She wasn't proud because our worship was brilliant. She wasn't proud because we had a great building. She wasn't proud because we were such a big growing church that there was 1,000 people there on Sunday.
Yeah.
She was proud of the church because we're engaged in the city.
Mm.
And that made an impact upon her family. I want to see more of that.
I share that. I share that
yeah.
experience.
You yeah.
know? Like, because you see Sunday and, you know, I guess you grow up and youth leaders are like, you have to love worship, and I love
yeah.
worship. And you have I to love sermons, and I love church.
Yeah.
But the feeling of seeing a unity movement that impact the city go inside the schools, the yeah. public schools, and, like, you know, yeah. just work,
yeah.
love them there, and then, you know, go into different areas where other yeah. people are not stepping into.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is like how multiple institutions created hospitals, universities. Absolutely. You know, oh, when that happens, yeah. there's just a different feeling.
Yeah, and you know what this is early days again, but what is appearing as to one of the greatest opportunities for the church within our society is this opportunity to be friends.
Yeah,
not professionals, right? We've got professional service delivery all around, right? But what the professional service delivery people are saying to us is, will you be friends with our clients? We have the Northern Centre that's in Ryde, who does great work with homelessness and other groups of people in Ryde. They ask us basically the same question as the police. Could we link you up with our clients whereby you could be friends? You see, isolation and mental health issues are the biggest issues in probably every city across the country. And they're not solved by professional service delivery alone. They're sold by somebody who loves.
It takes a village to raise a child.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, how do we become friends of our city, particularly broken and our hurting parts of our city? And then how do we be the conduit where our city can come alongside its hurt and its brokenness and be responsible for itself?
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to do this in two parts, but I'll quickly summarize what we have here. This is a book that's a collation, a summarization, a highlight of what you've seen across 70 churches and it's not a theological book.
Yes.
It's not a theoretical book. There have been decades of books
yeah.
that talk about why unity is important.
Yeah.
This is a book that when pastors are motivated and want to see unity across the city with other pastors as a unity movement, what are the key
yeah.
things on how to get that to happen?
Yeah.
It's a practical guide. That's yeah. the thing that you said.
Very much so. But also...
Yes.
You see, this is not a good idea. Right?
Could it?
Yeah. The church has had plenty of good ideas. Right? If this is anything, it's God's idea. Or it's actually nothing. And I think that's a decision and a personal journey that every spiritual leader in every city needs to take.
Yeah.
That's the journey I took with God, where he showed and revealed to me over a six-month period that this was the church he always intended. You see, if this is just a good idea, then take it or leave it. But if this is God's idea, then we actually have to say, actually, I'm a bit disobedient.
If I would take part in it too.
Yeah. And I think God's inviting pastors to decide whether this is seasoning for the church, a nice little thing that goes on top if you've got time to add it and you've got the inclination,
yeah.
or is it yeast?
Yeah.
Like the yeast makes the bread rise. You don't get bread without yeast.
Yeah.
Is what God's doing amongst us in this oneness for mobilization space, is this the yeast that enables the church to rise?
Mm-hmm.
If so... then we don't get to say, I haven't got time, I'm too busy. We actually have to say, how do I change my time? How do I reorganize myself so that I can be part of what God is doing
yeah.
and what he's shaping? I'm not saying this is a silver bullet, because I don't think there's silver bullets. But I do think that when you do the things of the kingdom in the way of the kingdom,
yeah.
then you see the blessing and the favor of the kingdom. And I actually believe that we've been going about I would challenge those listening and challenge, have we been going about the mission, go and make disciples of the kingdom, right? That's the mission. We all know it. No one argues about it. No one says, no, that's not the mission, right? But did we not listen for the strategic implementation of that?
Yeah.
Because you can have a mission, but go about it completely wrong, right? Because I think that John 17, Jesus preached the prayer, said, now here's how you implement that mission.
Yeah.
And he says, when you become one, like me and the Father and the Spirit are one, now that's a journey that we are still understanding.
Right? Yeah.
That will be generations of understanding and journeying into that. We won't be in oneness next year.
Yeah.
Right? We're starting to scratch the surface as to what that even means.
Yeah.
Let alone how do we become it, right? But when we journey into oneness, right, it then says the outcome will be that the city will know the love of the Father and they'll know the Son. Well, to me, that's a discipled city.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a bit like, if I can use this analogy, if you and I said we're going to be our mission is to sell meat pies, right? Let's say we decided that was our mission. The next thing we would say is, how are we going to sell meat pies?
Yeah.
Because we could sell cheap-priced meat pies through Coles, right? Well, that would be a strategic way of selling meat pies.
Yeah.
Or another strategic way of selling meat pies would be to open our own retail outlets in high street locations with high products sold at a high price.
Yeah.
Totally different ways of going about it. But until you even start to sell meat pies, you've got to decide your strategy.